Hello and welcome to AL.com's Friday Flicks Fix. I am Francesca Scalisi, and with me are Matthew Scalisi and Ben Flanagan, and we are going to talk about what's happening in a movie theater near you this weekend. So let's talk about the new releases. The Grey. Either one of you gentlemen want to tell me what the heck this movie is about?
I mean, all I really know about The Grey, and Ben mentioned this, but it's I think the sell line is it's Liam Neeson punching wolves. But I mean, I think the deeper appeal that has some people excited about this, it's kind of a relatively fresh name, writer-director Joe Carnahan, who's impressed some people in the past with his work. And I imagine he's kind of reinvigorated the gritty action drama a little bit. So there's certainly some reason to be optimistic about this movie. But I don't know, the trailer just doesn't really have me sold. I can't see anything going on here other than Liam Neeson sort of growling. I mean, Ben, what besides Joe Carnahan's name being involved, what has you interested in this?
Well, Carnahan plays a big role in it, but honestly, I have kind of latched on to this Liam Neeson phenomenon that has emerged ever since Taken came out. I'm a huge fan of that movie.
That's
actually,
because so I didn't realize that you were like a mid-50s dad.
Well, they're not the only ones. If you're just a pure action fan, then I think you're just going to like Taken. It's a relatively smart, extremely entertaining movie, and it stars a guy who's extremely likable. And to me, Liam Neeson is just one of those leading men actors who is incapable of telling a lie on screen. He's just one of he just has one of the most honest demeanors, and you pull for him in nearly everything that he's in. And yeah, it does have that kitschy appeal of it's Liam Neeson who kicks all sorts of ass lately in the vein of like, he kind of has this, you know, mythology building of like the Chuck Norrises of the internet. But you have Liam Neeson fighting wolves in the snow, so that's enough to sell some people in sort of a jokey way. But for me, honestly, I do like Liam Neeson as an actor. I like Carnahan as a director strictly based on 2002's Narc, the police drama he made with Ray Liotta and Jason Patrick. I don't think he's made a very good movie since then. But the fact that you have this survivalist tale starring Neeson set in the freezing cold wilderness of what I think is Alaska, to me it sort of harkens back to that movie in the late 90s, this movie called The Edge, which is a really awesome action-adventure movie starring Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin, and they play these guys who crash a plane, I believe, in the Alaskan or Canadian wilderness, I can't remember which one, and have to fight off the elements. They have to fight off the cold and bears and other animals, and The Grey just sort of reminds me of that, and just seeing Liam Neeson in that role of a survival expert at having to lead this team of men who have no idea what they're doing against a pack of deadly wolves, that seems like a relatively realistic circumstance that you might face when you're out in the wilderness. So I just think it sounds like a great idea, and the early buzz is that this movie's actually really good.
Well, you know what it brings to mind for me? That would be the film Snow Dogs. And
was frankly, there a Z in that title?
No, but there was a Cuba Gooding Jr. as the star.
That's right.
So basically, I'm pretty sure they mined the Alaskan wilderness for hilarity in that movie. So I'm not really into punching animals in the face. But you know, here's something. I'm going to get a little female on y'all. And can we just discuss what's going on with Liam Neeson, who is generally regarded as this very, very phenomenal actor who's kind of, I think he's kind of like B-listing himself. I mean, and I'm gonna get a little serious here, but I mean, do you think it could be potentially due to the tragedy in his own life that he's decided that he's going to go for lighter fare here?
Well, wasn't there a point, Ben, where he had said he completely, I'm retiring from acting after the Star Wars movies?
I think I would want to do that too after those movies. But I don't know. I don't know that for certain.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting parallel, Francesca. I mean, I don't.
But it does sort of seem like it coincided with the death of his wife, the very tragic death of his wife.
Right.
That he suddenly started doing these, like,
I mean, I don't want to psychoanalyze Liam Neeson.
It's just something that has struck me.
No, I mean,
all these, like, serious and very, like,
yeah,
respectable movies, and now he's doing I mean, and there's something to be said for somebody with the stature of him. Oh, that sentence didn't work out at all. That it sort of elevates the movie, any movie he's in, but it does seem like he's picking kind of silly movies.
Yeah, he was in Schindler's List, and now he's sort of like uttering catchphrases and then punching people afterwards.
But he's doing both, though. I think that he's had some bad luck with some of the more serious projects that he's taken on. I mean, he has worked on some really good stuff. Like, he worked with Miyazaki on the movie Ponyo. I mean, he was a voice in the English version of that. But he also worked with Adam McGowan on this movie called Chloe with Julianne Moore and the horrible Amanda Seyfried, which just turned out to be one of the worst movies of that year. And I mean, honestly, if I'm a serious actor and I have a chance to work with that director who's made some really good movies, I probably take that opportunity. But yeah, on the flip side, yeah, he has worked on just trash like Clash of the Titans, where he's famous now for saying something ridiculous in a movie. And he's also worked in something like The A-Team, which I think Joe Carnahan also directed.
Yes, that's right.
And, you know, he's a lot of fun in that. But again, you know, he's in something like The Next 3 Days, which is directed by, and say what you will, Matt, I know you're not a big fan, but directed by Paul Haggis, which I actually think is a really good underrated thriller. So, yeah, he has sort of built this mystique, I guess, or this persona as this mild-mannered action star, this guy in his 50s who apparently can kick everybody's ass with little to no explanation.
It's so funny that Hollywood seems to, like, genuinely, instead of going after, like, the, you know, 18 to whatever, 34 demographic of males, now they're going after your dad. I mean, I guess maybe, you know, times being what they are, they figure, well, that's the people who have expendable income, so maybe we should go after... So now there's a genre of movie that is your dad's movie. Favorite movie.
Yeah, but how was
your dad? No. I know your dad's a classy dude.
It all started with that Wild Hogs movie.
That's right. That's honestly, genuinely, like, they've kind of figured out, like, wait, baby boomers will go see a movie as long as we populate it with baby boomers.
Right.
Well, at least he wasn't in that, and he definitely could have been. Probably seems like
you see him being in that, right?
Oh, totally, totally. But no, I mean, college kids love Taken. They really do. I mean, that's when I can't remember when that movie came out. I think when I was like a senior or in.
I think it was just last year, I thought.
No, I think it was January of 2010.
Oh.
Okay. Well, a little afterwards, but you know, in my 20s, I saw that and was just like, "Hey, this kicks ass!" Just because it does. It's just nonstop ass kicking on the part of Liam Neeson and the directors.
Story. Wolf kicking. We were kind of talking about this last week with Contraband. There is this weird, like, January effect that's happening now that's kind of like, don't ask too much from the audience, like, action thrillers seems to be a trend in these, like, you know, quote-unquote down seasons. We're seeing more and more of these kind of gray movies, as it were. They're just sort of bland. Like, The Gray is the perfect name for a movie.
But
like
it's an easy genre to sell, and especially easy to sell when you don't have any competition in that. You know, they're not competing against big budget, you know, star studded summer movies. They're competing against silent French period pieces, and you know all of the Oscar stuff. So if you're the kind of person that likes The Gray, typically, and Ben Flanagan he's an exception to every rule. But if you're typically the kind of person that likes The Gray or Contraband, is going to be bummed that half the movies in theaters right now. Are, you know, have people crying in the trailers.
Well, I think maybe we'll close our discussion on The Gray with this, but who would have thunk that people would walk up to the ticket booth and say, I want that Liam Neeson movie? Like, but I think that's where we've headed. I think that is, you know, people who, you know, aren't as well versed in what's out there are going to go like, oh, let's see that new Liam Neeson movie. Weird.
It's funny because old people say that sometimes at the box office. Like, I remember going to the movie theater, and I think the movie Striptease with Demi Moore was out, and Burt Reynolds plays a really small role in it.
Right.
And I remember these old people in front of me at the Fox 12 in Tuscaloosa said, one for Burt Reynolds. They would say that about,
maybe
you know,
they
like,
just didn't want to admit that they didn't want to say that they were going to
well,
see
but
Striptease.
They would say that about, like, Jack Nicholson, too. One for Jack Nicholson, and it would be, like, as good as it gets or something like that.
All right. You guys, I have a great idea for a movie. You know how, like, every building has a ledge? Do you know also how cities have men in them? wait a second, I've got it. Let's make a movie about a man on a ledge. It's Man on Ledge.
And wouldn't it be better if it didn't have the A in it? If this movie was
called Man on a Ledge. I guess they were trying to differentiate it from Man on Wire,
yeah.
Which is actually, you know, an interesting movie.
Right.
But, yeah, Man on a Ledge. I genuinely don't know anything beyond what the title tells me about this movie.
Well, it's dumb. It really is. And that's no offense. I mean, well, it's actually, yeah, like you said before about Katherine Heigl, it's plenty of offense to the actors and everybody who's involved. I mean, this Sam Worthington guy, I mean, he seems like a nice enough Australian guy out there who has come onto the Hollywood scene and managed to, with what must be just a dynamite agent, squirm his way into these major projects, which make money, too. And I don't necessarily think that people are seeing these films because Sam Worthington is in it. I think if Matthew Perry had been in Avatar, people would have probably have gone to see that. But this,
hate
yeah.
Matthew Perry.
Well,
Studio 60? Come on.
I'm sorry, Mr. Sunshine fans out there are probably nagging about this. But no, this movie, yeah, it's about a guy who steps out on the ledge of a building and so he can distract people while his team of thieves robs a bank or something like that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's really stupid. It sounds like one of those movies that they refer to in Seinfeld, one of those like fake movies like the Death Blow or Firestorm or
Chuddle.
Yeah, Chuddle, Rochelle.
Why don't he just streak or something?
Right.
He doesn't have to be on the edge of a building.
Yeah, but again, I don't get the mullet. I really don't. I think
they
also
have gotten PG-13 if they've done that, Francesca.
I think he also has the mullet in this new Clash of the Titans movie, so I don't know what's going on.
Listen,
there.
Ben,
but
I'm married to a gentleman whose hairline does quickly turn into a mullet if he doesn't keep it in check, so maybe he can't help it. Maybe that is the shape of his head and hairline.
But hey, where did Sam Worthington come from? I mean, Ben,
Australia.
Did
we discuss this?
Yeah, but did he do anything before Avatar, or did he just appear from thin air in Avatar, and then suddenly he's in the new Terminator movie, he's in Clash of the Titans, he's in all of these huge, big budget projects.
He is right in there with Jeremy Renner and Gerard Butler, to
and
me.
Colin,
and just like, you might as well be, as they say in the Mighty Boosh, a man's thigh for a face. Like, it just doesn't...
Yeah, it doesn't
there's
register.
There's nothing... They're all interchangeable and all unimpressive
to
me.
And, you know, Colin Farrell did this too. I think Colin Farrell has since proven himself, but there seems to be, every few years, there'll be some guy who goes from absolutely nothing to being in, like, 8 huge movies at the same time.
He's like the it actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They force him on us to the point where, whether people like him or not, it's too late and he's famous.
That's cute, though, because clearly the person who's having that moment right now is Channing Tatum.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah, but he is the guy who's
movie. Don't hate on Channing Tatum on AL.com. He's a local boy, Francesca. We have a lot of Channing Tatum fan readers.
Look, I wasn't hating. I'm simply saying he is the guy who's in every movie that's coming out this year.
Well, with Sam Worthington, he did sort of turn up out of thin air. Look, the guy's not necessarily a bad actor. He's just extremely bland and boring and just doesn't really work as a leading man. I mean, he has been in a couple of American movies in very small roles before, but he was in Australian television and a few Australian movies. Like, he did I believe, a modern spin on the Macbeth play. They turned that into a movie. But then after that, yeah, he just sort of turned up in Avatar. And I remember reading interviews with James Cameron about this movie coming out, and this guy and James Cameron just was so sure about it, saying Sam Worthington is the next big thing in Hollywood. And the fact that, I guess, based on that, those recommendations and that buzz created by somebody like James Cameron in the industry, yeah, he gets parts in the new Terminator movie and Clash of the Titans and all of these other things. But it seems like that stock is beginning to sort of fade a little bit because, I mean, now he's winding up in, what, Modern Warfare commercials and Clash of the Titans sequel. I don't see much else on the horizon other than maybe an Avatar sequel that would suggest that Sam Worthington's 15 minutes aren't running out.
Well, here, I'm gonna throw out this question to you gentlemen, because I kind of feel like, particularly with the men in working right now, like, star quality is a thing of the past. Like, if you think about the guys who we really think of as, like, having that, you know, that extra spark that makes them really watchable, you're looking at your George Clooney and your Brad Pitt, who, guess what, are, you know, middle-aged to, like, you know, getting up there, AARP membership time. Who, I mean, I guess the only person I can think of who maybe has the it factor right now of the young guys is maybe Ryan Gosling, who I'm actually not that, I'm not a huge fan, but he seems to be, like, the star, the up-and-coming male star. But do you have any opinions on that? Who of this new crop has got it?
I think the two guys who can still sell the movie with their name alone are Adam Sandler and Will Smith, and they are, I know, they're in their 40s or whatever, right? And Johnny Depp, too, throw him into that ring. But in terms of younger guys who might be able to do that, the only ones I can really think of, I think Seth Rogen should be in the conversation, even though some of his movies haven't done well as of late. But in terms of, like, action movies and dramas, you're right, there isn't really somebody out there who is a go-to commodity.
Well, I like Seth Rogen a lot, but I think he's polarizing. I think there are people who really don't like Seth Rogen versus, you know, you got a George Clooney or Brad Pitt and or Will Smith. Everyone likes them.
Yeah, but everybody likes them. But even the older actors, their appeal at the box office anyway is beginning to sort of wane. I mean, George Clooney and Brad Pitt's movies, and they're getting much more selective, obviously, of the projects that they do. But their movies aren't automatic $100 million hits anymore. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Moneyball is obviously it's a movie that has a relatively complex plot, and it's very inside baseball, so to speak, about it gets into the intricacies of sport that nobody really cares about anymore in the United States. And then you have something like The Descendants or The Ides of March, which are adult movies that try to stimulate the brain, as opposed to just reach out to the lowest common denominator of audiences. I think, I guess you could look to someone like Mark Wahlberg, who does fairly well. I mean, even something as bland and stupid as Contraband managed to win number one at the box office, albeit in the $20 million range. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Matt, unless you have somebody else.
I'm wondering if, it speaks to the state of, men in general nowadays, that we sort of have this, suspended adolescence, and maybe now, the up-and-coming stars are kind of, the schlub club, and it is Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill and kind of the Judd Apatow crew.
Here's why I think you can't identify any young guys is I don't think that guys go to the movies to see guys their own age anymore. I think that maybe was a little bit more of a factor in the 80s. But
Did I just make up Schlub Club, by the way?
I don't know.
Because I'm patting myself on the back for that one.
But, I mean, it's kind of the same thing as Slack Pack.
Yeah, except I'm talking about a different group of guys. So I just coined something, and it was awesome. You heard it here first.
I mean, I think male moviegoers would rather go and see older, action heroes than guys their own age. I think there's
something that speaks to the adolescence of men these days, too. They're looking for father figures.
You're getting real psychoanalytical on the show tonight.
Look, hey, we promised people the goods. Yeah. I'm bringing it, Matt. All right. I'm bringing it.
Well, Matt, what do you think of these guys? I mean, obviously we've said Brad Pitt and George Clooney, but, I mean, you've got guys like Robert Downey Jr. and Matt Damon. You throw in Daniel Craig even, and these guys are still relatively old compared to, say, the people like Channing Tatum or Shia LaBeouf.
And it's not like it was in the 80s where, I mean, to really, if you look now, Ben, the young male stars are all famous because girls ooh and ah over them. It's not the, your Zac Efrons and whatnot. I don't know what the kids like these days, but I mean, in the 80s, you got guys like Tom Cruise and Matthew Broderick and kind of that young generation of male stars that made movies that were broadly appealing. They weren't making movies that were intended for girls, exclusively. They were sort of,
were mainstream stars. You're talking about a world where, Titans movies and Sword and Sandals, those are not being made for girls.
That's what I'm saying, though. I'm saying that that young male actors today don't make movies that are aimed at male audiences. Those guys are used for movies that are intended for female audiences. And the ones that are
Transformers, aimed... What are you talking about? I need some examples, Matt.
I'm saying, we're all the movies we just talked about, the guys that are out there making the top-line action movies right now, in the last 10 years, it's guys like Matt Damon and you know, even sort of this group of guys. Like Transformers doesn't really have that many young guys in it outside of Shia LaBeouf. It's older actors for the most part.
Josh Duhamel.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at a movie like The Hangover, that's a movie that is clearly aimed squarely at 16 and 17-year-old male audiences. And who's in that movie? It's a bunch of guys in their late 30s.
True. So what? Basically, the star system is dying.
No, it's not.
The stars are dying.
You don't become famous as a male lead actor until you're about in your 30s, is what I'm saying. Bradley Cooper sort of emerged from nowhere in his 30s, you know?
That's true.
I think that it's cyclical, though. I think right now brands and properties are sort of taking the place of the star to sell a movie. Because, I mean, and I hate to use this example, but, I mean, look at the Twilight movies and somebody like Robert Pattinson. Well, who has an extremely passionate fan base and following, obviously. Robert Pattinson is a huge star and girls fawn all over him. These are girls who are attracted to a male movie star, like Matt is saying.
Thank you for the perfect example.
He's still beyond the Twilight franchise. He can't really attract that fan base to his other projects, which are lame anyway. But, I mean, look at something like Remember Me or Water for Elephants. These movies didn't make any money. You know, so it's not really the names that are attracting the people so much as it is the brands and the properties.
Well said, Ben. All right, well, speaking of things that are going to attract the people, let's talk about One for the Money.
Francesca's face just fell into a frown.
This was one of those movies that the trailer came on inexplicably. It was before Young Adult is what it came on.
That's right.
Young Adult, this dark, smart comedy sort of, but yeah, not dramedy, one of those. And Matt and I looked at each other and were like, no. It just elicited a response of horror because it just looks so bad.
Yeah.
Anybody have anything to add to that?
I mean, look, if you don't think you're going to like a Katherine Heigl movie, you're not going to like this one. And if you have seen those other ones where she plays something like a girl who screams a lot and, you know, tries to get out of trouble and falls down, then if you like those movies, you're probably going to like this one, too.
She wants to have it all, but she can't until the end of the movie.
I think that, like, a morning radio show should create a contest or a game, like, every week or every day where it's the Katherine Heigl game, where they just play a random clip from one of her movies and you have to identify which movie it's from. It would be the most impossible game to win because all of her movies are the exact same movie. And I really don't think that this is any exception. This looks terrible, like you said. And this is one of those trailers that comes on before every single movie that you see in the theater, no matter what genre it happens to be. And it's easily the front runner for worst trailer of the year already. Already, I mean, it has all of the factors. I mean, first of all, Katherine Heigl's in the movie. Second, her male lead is this anonymous, just totally generic, dark and handsome guy that is just unrecognizable. And third, there's a Pink song in the trailer.
That's the formula for the Katherine Heigl trailer. But, I mean, Ben, I don't know if you'd call... I mean, certainly her last... I've got her Box Office Mojo page pulled up here, and certainly her last two or three movies were not tremendously successful. They were topped out around the $50 million range, but 27 Dresses and The Ugly Truth both did in excess of $75 million. I still probably would say that's not successful. I don't know. What's the standard you go by with a romantic comedy like this?
I guess it sort of depends on the budget. It's kind of a case-by-case basis. But I think that studios are still banking on her to be this, face of this next generation's America's sweetheart, I guess.
Julia Roberts.
Yeah, in sort of the tradition of Julia Roberts and Reese Witherspoon, who had kind of a short run doing it, Sandra Bullock there for a while, and she's just sort of failed, I guess, to latch on. And I think that, again, it's kind of, it reflects the fact that a male can't really carry these films on their name alone either. I mean, you need a good script, too. I mean, these movies that she's in are just horrible. I mean, they look bad from the get-go, and if you can't sell them with these bad trailers, then you've got a problem on your hands.
Well, I am going to tell you, and it pains me to say it, but I have known people who have said, oh, we're going to see that Katherine Heigl movie. Unfortunately, she does have an audience, because I guess she's kind of, she is, she and, what's her face? She won an Oscar, and she used to be good until she sold out. She's Goldie Hawn's daughter. Her name is?
Hudson.
Yeah, Kate Hudson. She and Kate Hudson are sort of like the gals for romantic comedies, and that's really being generous with the word comedy that are being put out. But, you know, there's still an audience, and I think they make these movies for pennies, especially, I mean, this one, she is the only name in it, so she's the only one getting any kind of salary.
John Leguizamo is in it.
Well, she's the only one who's getting any kind of salary off.
I take back everything that I said about this movie.
Yeah, right. I think, unfortunately, there is an audience, and so as long as they're keep on, you know, as long as they can kind of clinch the ladies, you know, who will come and see these movies because it's the girl movie, then they're going to keep making these piece of crap movies. And,
well,
by the way, we should note that Katherine Heigl was in, you know, Knocked Up, which is kind of the movie that built the House of Judd, but I don't consider that a Katherine Heigl movie, and honestly, I think the main character is Seth Rogen, really, in that movie,
and
not
her. I think she actually came out later and said she doesn't like that movie. She was also in a Johnny Knoxville movie called The Ringer, which I want to say it may not have been directed by the Farrelly brothers, but I think they were involved in that, and that was a... I saw that, and it was not a bad movie, so... Katherine Heigl can be, if she chooses to be.
No, I think those movies were
entertaining.
Good despite her.
No, but she can be likable in a movie.
She's good in Knocked Up. She's good in Knocked Up. I think she totally worked, and I think that's where they saw such great potential in her. And obviously, she built the fan base on Grey's Anatomy until people grew to apparently hate her. That's based on what I've heard. But if you look at her track record, isn't so bad when she's the main draw in these movies. I mean, if you just look at it, after Knocked Up, which was not successful because of her, you have 27 Dresses, Ugly Truth, Killers, Life as We Know It, and New Year's Eve. All of them made more than $47 million. And $47 million isn't necessarily successful with these bloated budgets these days, but it's really not bad if you're making in the range of 70 to 80 and over $50 million. So,
and these are the kind of movies, by the way, that you know, high school and college girls will go and buy these DVDs, and you know, it's nobody's favorite movie, but these movies sell they have a second life on home video. You know, romantic comedy.
Home video, that's cute, Grandpa.
Well, whatever you call that, but
a DVD,
romantic
a Blu-ray.
Romantic comedies do extraordinarily well in DVD sales.
All right, so we've discussed the new releases. Do we want to... we had each recommended a movie that we have seen recently. Ben, do you want to give your pitch for why people should see War Horse?
Well, I can, yeah. I mean, I just think that... And I don't want to... Am I echoing that?
No, you're good.
Okay. I don't really understand the backlash for this movie here, and I don't want to pay too close attention or draw too much attention to the negative reaction that people have had to it. I think it's sort of unfair, and a lot of people didn't go see this based on the trailer, and they judged it without having seen it. But if you just sort of check your snark at the door and sit back and watch it, I think that you're going to experience something that you've experienced before with the best of Steven Spielberg's films. And I think that you can throw this into that category of great Spielberg movies, these movies that sort of fill you with wonder as you're staring there in that, or as you're sitting there in that dark theater. And it's just a really, compassionate story about just completely likable characters, and it's just told with such an epic scale, with such beautiful photography and music, and just respect for the medium with which it's telling the story. I just think that this is old-time filmmaking at its best. I really do. This is one of my favorite movies of the year, and it's just completely heartfelt. Yes, it's sentimental. Yes, it can be a little cheesy at times, but honestly, I wish that more movies were sentimental and cheesy sometimes these days. And honestly, just because it's a little bit of those things, that does not mean that it's too much of those things. And I think that's what people with these short attention spans now out there that judge movies based on the 2 seconds they see in their trailers, I think that's extremely unfair. And I just think if you give this movie a chance, you're really going to love it.
And you said it's leaving Tuscaloosa, is that right?
Yeah, it's leaving Tuscaloosa, but it'll still be in some Birmingham theaters, fortunately.
Right, the Rave Lee Branch, it looks like, the Rave at Patton Creek. We just watched a film made by a Frenchman and loved it.
Yeah, well...
And you said culture.
So the artist, which people, if you're interested in hearing more of what Francesca and I have to say about it, you can listen to our full Cinematrimony podcast that's going to be linked here. But
it is playing this weekend at the Cobb Hollywood 16 in Tuscaloosa, and it continues to play in Birmingham at the Vestavia Rave as well as the Summit Carmike Theater.
Yeah.
So from the Scalise camp, that's a big old recommendation. And I think we're going to wrap it up here.
Well, a couple of quick other movies that are Oscar nominated, you know, in the area that are probably worth your attention. Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which is now one of only 2 Best Picture nominees that I have not seen, and I'm not sure if I'm gonna or not. We'll talk about that later, maybe. But that is playing at the Cobb Hollywood 16 in Tuscaloosa, as well as several places in Birmingham. It's at the Rave at Patton Creek and Vestavia. It's also at the Summit. And also playing at the at a couple of different theaters, one in Tuscaloosa and then also at the Summit here, is The Iron Lady, which is nominated for Best Actress for Meryl Streep's performance. Anything else noteworthy out there? The Descendants is still playing both in Tuscaloosa and Birmingham.
Albert Nobbs, was Glenn Close nominated?
Yeah, that's right. Albert Nobbs playing at the Rave Lee Branch.
I think we've covered a lot of bases. There'll be more of this type of blather next week on our AL.com Friday Flix Fix. We'll see you then.